This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Poetry Foundation, with a reminder that Chicago is the pulse of poetry. Visit the Poetry Foundation on the corner of Superior and Dearborn to explore their library of 40,000 books, attend public events, and view Frente a la Vida, Facing Life, a striking multidisciplinary art exhibition by Chicago artist Victoria Martinez. Learn more at poetryfoundation.org. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work Policy and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work, social policy, and social administration prepares professionals to address today's most pressing challenges and offers flexible options with part-time and evening classes to support busy adults balancing complex schedules. Inspire change, shape the future at crownschool.uchicago.edu/social work.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. Kids are about halfway through their summer break, and for parents, it's a struggle to keep those little beloved monsters busy and entertained. Inevitably, we turn to screens. Many parents worry about their children getting a little too chummy with their devices, maybe to the point of addiction. That's why some people are turning to so-called anti-dopamine parenting. It's an approach that replaces screen time with other outlets to give kids a boost. For more on this, we're checking in with Devorah Heitner, author of ScreenWise, Helping Kids Thrive and Survive in Their Digital World. And Dr. Khaled Afzal, Assistant Professor of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry at the University of Chicago. Devorah, I'll start with you. I want to preface the convo with the fact that screens and social media and tech, it's not all bad, right?
Absolutely. There can be wonderful sources of family connection. You can enjoy screen time with your kids.
Yeah, you've got a 14-year-old. What does screen time look like in your house?
So Discord and games are the primary use of screen time for my kids' solo or peer-based screen time, and that's the primary interest, and then some YouTube. And then as family screen time, we enjoy some shows together. We just started we just started watching Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, nice.
So, and it actually wasn't streaming anymore. We had to go to the library and get that one. And we're so excited to have a good family show again because we were kind of in between shows for a while. And we noticed that when we have a family show, we do spend more time together in the evenings. And for sure, we also like board games and taking walks and other unplugged things. But it's great to have a show, especially with a teenager, because it gives us something to talk about, something to look forward to.
Yeah, my girls and I do the same thing. We have certain shows that we just pile in front of the TV and watch. And it might be once or twice a week, but we sort of try to keep it to a minimum, at least the together time. What about you, Doctor? You've got children.
I have three children.
Yes.
But they're much, much older now. They're in college.
Okay.
But the thing is that the screen time is still, I kind of monitor, you know, specifically when it's the family time. I don't want them to be on there.
Put that phone down.
Exactly.
Oh, I know.
So I think that is crucial for us. And we also have kind of family screen time, like Devorah, like watching movies and shows. But I think the screen time is a little bit different with young adults.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we started out, Devorah, by saying that it's not all bad, right? Some people are listening to us and they're going to immediately say, listen, this is the world that we live in right now, right? Leave me alone and leave my screens alone, right? So there are a lot of benefits to using them, and I'd love for you to sort of remind us of what those are.
Well, kids are building community in these spaces. They're learning how to interact and do research. My kid has been able to find really fascinating things doing research online. But we also want to make sure that they're, you know, using media literacy skills, making sure that the things they find online are true, especially if they're about, you know, current events. But there's a lot that's good about the skills. I do think today's Minecrafters are going to be tomorrow's engineers as well. And so there's a lot of spatial skills, reasoning skills, collaboration skills that are happening, I think, especially in gaming spaces. Surely some of our kids' TikTok and YouTube skills will also bring out their dancing and music and other things. So I think it's worth really paying attention to what interests your kid on a screen to see if you can also support those interests in other ways. When I found out my kid was into war and strategy games, you know, we got Risk and we started reading about current events and learned more about those things. So you can also lean into, if your kid's watching cooking shows, you know, could they actually learn to cook and bake? these are skills that will benefit you greatly both now and in the future when your kid is the only one on their college dorm floor who knows how to do more than boil water.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's the flip side. We got to talk about that, right? Because kids get on screens and some of them don't want to let go, like literally, right? And adults, we know that we are also guilty of the same thing. But it's so much worse now because, I mean, we've always had video games. But I don't know that many of us who came up in the 80s and 90s that we used it as much of a crutch as the kids do today. So what changed?
Well, the design is incredibly good, right? The touch screen is very accessible even to a preschooler. You don't need to read. You don't need to keyboard. So a lot of the barriers to access for younger kids are absolutely gone. And you see little kids will like swipe a magazine thinking it's going to be like an iPad. And then we're using it all the time. So they get it. They think it's cool because mommy and daddy are doing it. If you leave a phone in another room, your toddler will bring it to you because they know how attached you are to that thing.
Right.
So I think it's really important to look at our own behaviors and, you know, could you go for a walk around your block? Could you go for a bike ride without your phone? Or do you feel really insecure leaving without it? Then you shouldn't be surprised if your teenager, for whom their social world is as important as it's ever going to be developmentally, you know, teenagers really, really live for their friends. Of course, their phone is going to be important to them.
That's so true. Well, Dr. Afzala, I want to dig into something that I mentioned in the intro, right? And that's the connection between screens and dopamine. A person, an adult or a kid, they pull up a screen, they scroll through social media, they watch a video on YouTube maybe, they're getting a shot of dopamine mm-hmm. at the same time. Why is that? What's happening in our brains?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And dopamine is a reward neurotransmitter or reward kind of hormone. So that is something that's the feel-good part. That's why it is called kind of a feel-good hormone. So that's the thing that keeps us engaged and redoing the same thing to get the same reward. And that can easily lead to the addiction cycle. That's why, you know, you already mentioned that. Is it leading to addiction like other mm-hmm. addictions?
So is it the screen that's addictive or the thing that they're connecting with on the screen?
Both.
Ugh.
Both.
Double whammy.
Yeah, I know. So that's why, you know, one of the treatments is to take the screens away, to take that kind of stimulus away. So there are both things.
So we're getting these boosts of dopamine. So what then? Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Mm-hmm. That's a really good question. It could be a good thing, like Devorah said when it is used to create that content which is helpful for our future, for our current situations, like those strategy games, connecting. I think right now, social media screen time is the lifeline of our kids and adolescents and somewhat adults. And I think that concept is crucially important, that lifeline.
The word lifeline is
kind
of frightening.
I know, because
for me.
I know. There have been studies that taking phones away has been linked with suicidal ideation and actual attempts because they feel that they are like totally isolated. The connection to the world is gone. So that's why I call it as lifeline. And dopamine is the reward. That's the thing that we get after we are there. Like that's why when we are doing homework on the screen, even if we get the right answer, we don't get the same reward because our homework assignments are not set in a way our gamers do, because they are providing that opportunity where we seek that reward over and over again, and that leads to addiction.
I see. So it sounds like at a neurological level, you're becoming wired to associate feeling good and rewards and desire with the screen, right? Emily Churkin is a screen time consultant, and she told NPR that this is what she tells parents, quote, "It's not you versus your child, but rather it's you versus a hijacked neural pathway. It's the dopamine that you're fighting, and that's not a fair fight." Would you agree?
I kind of agree on several levels. One of the things is that when we feel that our child is at fault, it leads to relational issues. So when we kind of in more lingo, like externalize that, blaming dopamine, I think I take the blame away from my kid, and that will not affect my relationship. Oh, that is something I have to deal with, not my child. So there are inherent advantages to using that concept.
And I just say, I also think if you look at it like, wow, these apps really want to keep us there, what can we do collectively? Then you're aligning yourself on the same side. Like when I talk to kids about distraction and homework, I say to parents, you don't want to fight and say, I caught you being distracted. You want to say, wow, these devices are very distracting. And a lot of kids are trying to do homework on that Chromebook where there's also something else. It's like trying to do homework at a party. How can we together think about how to defeat distraction? So what you're doing is you're aligning yourself and saying, I'm on your side. I want you to have the fun of maybe watching some TikTok videos, but I also want you to get your sleep and I want you to be able to do other things.
Yeah.
Including taking pleasure in things you enjoy, whether it's going outside or playing with Legos, or for older kids, spending time in person with friends and not just online. And that's where I worry about the dopamine piece. It's like, it's great if you enjoy watching a show, but if you stop enjoying things that you used to like that aren't the screen, that's not so good.
And also, like, screens with this kind of concept, I think it is important for us to understand from a neurological standpoint that kids have an opportunity to not have that, you know, when we are in reality and we are in a relationship, some relationships are good and sometimes they are not as good and we are still with them. But with the screen, we have the opportunity to just slide off to another video game.
Turn it off.
Exactly.
Move on to something
else. Exactly.
So
that's also from learning standpoint, it's not a good thing in the longer run.
Neurologically, is screen addiction similar to a gambling addiction or drug addiction?
I think it is, because it is using the same pathway, unfortunately. So there's a lot of research going on right now. And I think in the upcoming editions of International Classification of Diseases and Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, which is our Bible for mental health disorders, I think it will be included very soon, unfortunately. Because it does affect actual areas of the brain, specifically when the child is at a young age.
So, Devorah, let's talk about this anti-dopamine parenting part of the conversation. I mean, how do you define it?
I think it's important to make sure we're having a balanced life, taking pleasure, again, in other things that are moving more slowly. And when you go right from a video gaming environment or watching something like YouTube or TikTok, your mind is working at a very fast, you're getting a lot of stimulation very quickly. And it can be hard to transition that to to like dinner and sitting down and being like, oh, how was your day? And so we need a minute. And so one thing to think about is, how do we help kids reground in the body? You know, is it taking a few breaths? Is it running around the block? Is it remembering to go to the bathroom if you've been sitting playing video game for 5 hours or eating a snack? Because we tend to forget about our bodies in those moments. And regrounding in the body also helps the mind shift and be ready to engage at a different speed. But realistically, I do think parents want to build in that time of transition. I don't think it's realistic to expect the kid to go right from watching TikTok or playing a video game or something with that intense stimulation to the slower pace of dinner or a leisurely walk. And we have to recognize that we don't do that either. When you sit down to your work email, it's hard to transition to family time from that. Most of us need to take a breath or have some kind of completion activity. So building that into the day, and then really thinking about what we are modeling. If we can't put our phones down, if we sleep in bed with our phones, which a lot of people do, that's what we're modeling for our children.
As I'm making the guilty face as you say that, our listener Cherish from Lake Zurich called but couldn't remain on the line. I do want to read her comments, though. She said, I have three children who are in elementary and middle school. We try to have family shows or have activities to do together, but I feel like they're just waiting to get back on tech. So the waiting to get back to the screens, that's the part that really resonates, I think, because you see that all the time in kids. I see that with mine for sure. Getting antsy, they want the iPad if you've taken it back. Is that withdrawal, doctor? Like, how do you keep the kids engaged and not have one eye on the screen at the same time?
I think that's a great question. It's a really great question. So I'll handle this question like in two different ways. One, is it an actual withdrawal? I'm not sure yet, you know. So it could be in certain situations, but I think it's more like reward seeking than withdrawal. So they just want to go back to the same kind of dopamine state, so to say, and that's what they're seeking. So in another kind of view, I feel that I agree with Devorah that we need to model, because kids, monkey see, monkey do, they also see how we are handling screen time. So I think it's crucially important for us as adults to show this kind of restraint and restriction. And dividing our areas in the house even where we can use screen versus not.
Devorah, let's talk about harm. Okay, what do we know about how screen addiction impacts kids socially or physically?
Well, if we see things getting really out of balance, I mean, most of us aren't qualified at home to diagnose our kid with an addiction. And I would push back on using that word, like a kid who would rather play Minecraft or look at TikTok than take out the trash or do homework. That's a preference. That's not an addiction. You know, I'm not qualified because I'm not a psychologist or a psychiatrist to diagnose addiction. But where I'd be worried and say a family needs support is if a kid isn't leaving their room, if a kid isn't going to school, if a kid isn't taking a shower, you know, and taking care of themselves, or if a kid is withdrawing from things that used to bring them pleasure and connect them to the family and to life beyond the screen, that would concern me very much. Mm-hmm. Or if a kid is looking at content or creating content that suggests self-harm, that suggests eating disorders, you know, looking at what your kid is doing online versus a kid who's very into tech because they really love gaming and they're moderating 3 gaming forums and it's a huge part of their social life. That kid may need to be pushed into balance, but I wouldn't necessarily call it an addiction if it's a strong interest, but they still are able to do other things.
Well, we have a doctor here who could diagnose something like that. So I'm curious, how do you know that your kid is addicted or just a casual screen user?
It's a really great question. And addiction is, I think it's kind of a really big term, and I'm a little bit careful in using as well still. Some of the ways where we diagnose somebody with addiction is that they need to avoid the withdrawal. I think that is a definition from addiction. So it's not necessary. So initially, addiction starts with reward seeking. So they go for reward, and then they need to do more of the same to get the same reward, and then more of the same and more of the same to get the same. Mm-hmm. So after a while, when they stop doing it, they have that intense withdrawal, like a physical, the body's response that I need the same thing, which could be like physical pain, even like the psychological pain, mood irritability, sleeplessness,
headaches,
absolutely.
Yeah.
So to avoid that, they need to do. So that's the definition of addiction, which, when we're talking about kids and gaming and social media, everybody is not there, like Devorah said. They're not like at the addiction, but there are kids who are, and how we diagnose. There's a simple way where I educate all parents, which I see. I divide into like 3 categories. One is the biological functioning, sleep and appetite. So if there is a significant disruption of sleep, meaning usually it is because of social media, but it is like really, really, they're not sleeping for like sometimes days in mm-hmm. a row. That is crossing that kind of. They're not eating. I have like individuals who don't go out to eat. They are just drinking whatever just to have like fluid intake or energy drink to be in front of the screen.
That sounds like an addiction.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that is the biological piece. Second piece is like social relationships, like even Devorah was saying that how they are with their own peers. Are mm-hmm. they avoiding them because of the screen, their relationship with the family, how it is. Mm-hmm. And the third is their functioning. And their functioning, their job is school and extracurriculars. So if...
Are the grades slipping?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Grades are slipping. They're not doing their homeworks. And
I know parents right now are like, check, check, check of all those 3. Let's jump to the phones. We've got a few folks waiting here. First up is Kavita in Carol Stream. Hey, Kavita, welcome to the show.
Yeah, hi. How are you?
Doing well. Thanks for calling. What does screen time look like in your house?
Well, I have little children, so they kind of use the screen for a lot of good and bad stuff, which is like great. I don't. When they were younger, we had like a lot of rules, but right now they're on their own, living on their own. But I'm a teacher. And I always am concerned about screen time for myself, where I sometimes feel I don't have self-control a lot. But like as teachers, we are supposed to have phones in the classroom. Okay, we all carry phones all the time because that's security purposes with everything that's happening in schools these days. But I think like every time I'm flipping out a phone from my pocket to check my messages, I'm kind of sending wrong signals too to my students. I know I'm using it for a good reason, but I don't know what is the solution to this, but I constantly worry about it. When I'm in a classroom, I pull up my phone. I know my admin sends me messages. I know we have sub shortages. We get a lot of messages and we have meetings.
Yeah.
A lot of things that happen in a school, but like if the students are watching me, elementary level students, I'm on the phone, like, what am I sending? What kind
of you feel like you're not practicing what you preach, it sounds like, Kavita. Yeah, good question there. What are your thoughts on that, Devorah?
A lot of schools are rethinking their phone policies. Certainly high schools, where most kids are bringing their own phones every day, are rethinking, is this working out? How is study hall going? Are people wasting their time, you know, just kind of scrolling and not getting things done? So I think it is worth thinking about what we're doing, what we're showing our students. And if you can put it away and look at it, you know, at lunch or at times when your students aren't there, that might be good. Or one thing we can do, both parents and teachers can do, is explain what we're doing. Oh, I just got a note from the principal that says we have a visitor coming, or I just got a note from, really saying, and parents can do this too, oh, I'm texting with grandma. So when you say it's time to stop gaming and have dinner, your kids can't say, oh, but you're playing with Words with Friends. If you're saying, no, actually I'm texting with somebody's caregiver, or I'm texting the drugstore about a prescription. Just
like, this is a necessary conversation right now.
Our parents heard we heard our parents on the phone, and we learned a lot about social stuff from hearing our parents on the phone. So if we can translate even a little bit of what we're doing with our communication, not just thumbing it out in front of kids, that will actually help them learn some of our adult communication skills and even the decisions that are going into, is this a message that can go out by text, or is this an in-person conversation, anything like that.
Yeah. Let's hear now from Emily in Logan Square.
Hi, Sasha. I'm Emily. I'm actually a third-year medical student at the University of Illinois at Chicago, and I'm really interested in addiction medicine and the science of addiction. So when I heard this conversation, it really piqued my interest. Something that I wanted to bring up, and I think this has been touched upon in the last couple of minutes, the previous caller made this really good point, and so did the doctors. You know, modeling the right behavior is really hard. And I think that there are many adults who are as addicted or even more, I guess, addicted or dependent than children. So it's hard to model the correct behavior if you yourself are experiencing, quote unquote, like withdrawals, or you're unable to look away from your phone. But I also want to speak to what one of the physicians just said about the benefits of screen time. I don't have children myself, but I have a 2-year-old niece, and I at least once a week I get to see her on FaceTime, even though she lives across the country. So I know it's not all bad, but we definitely have a lot of work to do with regards to monitoring these things for children, and
for
making sure that they're being used in a good way, you know.
Great points, Emily. Thank you so much for calling. You're nodding, doctor.
Exactly. Yeah. Because I think this is a great point, Emily. Thank you for bringing that up. I think both of us, Devorah and I, have talked about modeling. How we can do it is by educating parents. I think most of the parents still don't know, and I think we need to educate way more than we have. And I appreciate, Devorah, what you have been doing in schools. And I do in my part in my clinics, but I think we need to, I appreciate, Sasha, you, what you are doing with this forum, because I think that this is the way we need to educate parents about the
And issue. I appreciate you, because you're highlighting all of the things I'm doing wrong. Right? I'm quietly listening to these callers and thinking, guilty, so guilty. I've been told by my teenagers, like, you know, put your phone down. Oh, you're looking to, and I'm like, oh, it's a work email. I try to do what Devorah said. I try to talk them through what I'm doing. Doesn't work when they're 15 and 16. Here's a tip that we got from Susan Lynn. She's the author of Who's Raising the Kids? Big Tech, Big Business, and the Lives of Children. This is what she had to say when she was on Reset a few months ago about what parents can do.
They can make sure that meals are screen free, or, you know, find at least one night a week where nobody's on screens. I mean, parents can try to limit their own screen time, the amount that they're on their phones, for instance. I mean, I'm not talking about work. I'm talking about scrolling through social media.
Right. So she mimics a lot of what we just said. Tell us, Devorah, though, some of the different ways that parents can practice this so-called anti-dopamine parenting, because, I mean, it's more than just what we've been talking about, which is limiting screen time, right? It's totally redirecting where they're getting these dopamine boosts from.
Well, we want to help them become aware of how to self-regulate around the content that they're consuming and sharing. And so helping them notice, how do you feel after you use Snapchat? How do you feel when you're on YouTube? How do you feel on the Discord? And you're not going to ask that every 5 minutes, but just getting kids to kind of notice, what is your mood before, during, and after? And how can you help yourself make transitions? And having a schedule, especially in the summer when things are so open for many families, having a schedule so kids know when they're going to get that uninterrupted time, actually. I mean, it might sound like that's not anti-dopamine, mm-hmm. but if kids know, like, hey, I'm going to have a couple hours on the weekend to maybe really dive into my game and get to the next level and be with my friends. But if you only have 20 minutes, a conversation we've had in my house is, if you only have 20 minutes, is this actually going to be satisfying for 20 minutes? Do you want to even get on right now? Or is it just going to make us all have a fight? And avoiding conflict, or, you know, reducing conflict. I have a teenager, so we don't avoid conflict, but
right.
we would like to reduce conflict. Mm-hmm. And that's important. And I think because, you know, what you were saying, Doctor, about addiction is so important to recognize that we don't have to rise to that threshold to have a problem. That there are plenty of families that have a lot of conflict over screen time, or a kid who's staying up late one or two nights a week maybe doesn't rise to the, you know, definition of addiction, but that's still maybe a kid who maybe we could take their phone away at night and solve the problem for them, especially if they're a middle schooler. Maybe they're not ready to self-regulate completely around yeah. having the connected device in their room at night. So anti-dopamine parenting is also talking about your own mood, like just talk with your kids about, hey, when I get off social media, sometimes I feel kind of bummed out, or all this scrolling isn't bringing me the joy I want. What would bring me a joy? Maybe going for a run, or, mm-hmm. you know, preparing a meal, or, you know, snuggling with the dog would bring me some joy. And even just verbalizing that thought process for yourself.
That's so great. I mean, Doctor, you started out by telling us about your kids are, you know, the college age at this time. But I'm curious if the dopamine addiction, whether it's from screens or even junk food, mm-hmm. could be part of this conversation too. Is it more of a concern the younger the kid is then?
That's a really good question. I think as we grow older, the effect on, because the neurological pathways by mid-20s are reasonably formed, and by late 20s are almost formed, although they continue to kind of refresh throughout our lives, you know. But younger the age, definitely. There was a study recently published from age group 3 to 5 years old.
Yeah.
And they noted that with screen times, which was not that much, like a few hours a day, which is not that much at all, they found that there were like major areas in the brain that affected their attention, their even cognition, memory. So all of those things which these important areas are forming in this formative age group are going to be affected.
Yeah.
The younger, the more affected.
Let's squeeze in one more caller. Here's Kathy from Prospect Heights. Hey, Kathy.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a teacher and in an elementary school building. And what I've noticed is as all of our students have gone to one-to-one devices, it seems like the whole school day they're on devices. And even during reading, like independent reading time, kids are reading on their devices, you know, instead of holding the book. And so this concerns me because if they're on the device all day at school, then they go home and they're on the device all day. Like, when are they off their devices?
Yeah, very good point, Kathy. I'm thinking of the Chromebooks that I know are in my mm-hmm. kids' bags right now, all day long, and of course, as well as the cell phones. So we're just about out of time, but just final advice here, Dr. Afzal.
Yeah,
what should parents take away from this conversation?
Yeah, so I think that we need to just educate them about the content, because we can't avoid Chromebooks, frankly speaking. I think that's the way. We need to educate parents about screen times. We need to educate about content. And then we need to educate parents about monitoring when they see that it is crossing the norm and, and becoming a problem and seeking help. Exactly.
That's Dr. Khaled Afzal, who's an assistant professor of child and adolescent psychiatry at the U Chicago Medicine. And we've also been talking with Devorah Heitner. She's the author of ScreenWise, Helping Kids Thrive and Survive in Their Digital World, and also a forthcoming book that's called Growing Up in Public, Coming of Age in a Digital World. It's coming out in September. Devorah and Dr. Afzal, thank you so much.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure.
This episode of Reset was produced by Meha Ahmed and edited by Dan Tucker and Andrew Merriweather. For more conversations like this one, make sure to subscribe to this podcast. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks so much for listening.